they can sign again. We do have a form. Everybody please join in.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please make sure your cell phones are turned off. The main purpose of this meeting is, of course, the public hearing. And to that end, we will be, city manager will go down and we'll be going through the charter prior to the public gathering. Before we get started, we should have, first of all, this is the city council charter committee. And will each person introduce themselves and whether or not they are the city resident?
City Jones and city resident. I am a city resident.
I am a city resident.
And I'm Bob Steffens and I am a city resident. And of course,
Rick Allen, city manager.
Patty Moore, administrative assistant.
And one person is missing, because we had nine, right? Laura, and she is, must be a county? She out of the city? Must be.
She's out because there's five on the street that are in the city. There's nine members to the board.
Yeah, they made it five to four, and we set it up.
Could I ask you to speak up a little bit? We have a heater that is blowing out our ears.
I'll stand up there.
There's a bit of a background here. Well, ma'am, if you could come up front, too.
I was thinking the
one behind you, maybe. If you'd like to come to the front a little, would that help?
It would help also if you kind of speak this way instead of looking at each other.
What we're going to do is do a PowerPoint that's that way, and then they can all turn to you.
That'd be wonderful. Would that work?
I couldn't even hear what you said.
Come on up and sit beside me, please. That would be so nice.
Actually, it will be city manager Rick doing most of the talking until it becomes a dialogue between us, and certainly we...
My face is probably been down.
Non-fatally, we can
pretty
ask questions to any council committee member. And we do, as Linda noted, we do appreciate the new council members who are present today. Just a quick background, I think it's important to note the incredible amount of data that city manager Rick and the city staff put together for us, that we were able to get to this point over the last couple of months. We've actually had information. First of all, there's, as you may know, there's a little over 200 cities with city charters in the state of Oregon. And we have information from each one of them that they put together for us. We did an in-depth study of a number of those charters. And that's where we are tonight. And I guess with that, Rick, let's go ahead.
Thanks for coming out in the snow. And let's see this, that once we get to the other, get rid of the bill. A charter is one of the things that a city has to have. And right now we're operating under the state statutes. And so that means whatever the state of Oregon has on the books, that's what you do with it. And, you know, you normally probably a little sooner than we are here, but you would end up with your own charter. And that outlines how you're going to operate as a city. How you do ordinances, resolutions, how you do hearings, how many councilmen do you have? You want seven or five or three? the mayor elected? Is the mayor elected from the council, or is the mayor run? Are they 3-year terms, 4-year terms? You can really do most anything. And that's kind of the sovereign power that you're given when you form as a city. And so, this has to be voted on by the people, and you'll see a schedule. We plan on having this May of next year, 2011. That means May 17th. And that will go to a vote. And hopefully be approved, and that becomes your charter. Cities have them. Most cities only change them every 10 to 20 to 30 years. This is like your constitution. They're very broad, so they don't get into details of things, and you don't clutter them up with stuff. It's kind of your constitution of how you operate. We took the League of Oregon Cities has a template charter that they tell you to use, and they keep updating that. This one, I think, was 04 is the last time they had updated it. So we took that as a base. Then we studied other charters, and in particular, and on another PowerPoint that they worked through, we actually would put what the charter from the League of Oregon Cities would say and what other cities say. And you can kind of compare. And we used Prineville being a larger city and one that had been updated not too long ago, but they're a 100-year city. Sisters being just a little bit bigger, and they're both in the region. Theirs has not been updated in quite as recent. We took Damascus being the next newest city in Oregon. So they were the new cities. So you had 100-year cities, you had a 4 or 5-year city. And then we took Kohler being smaller. Smaller city, larger city, a little bit larger city, and the newest city. And those are the ones we really studied. But people went home on their own and looked at, there's 200 and some cities. You can look at them all. They're all online. But this gave us a good template to go from. So, that's the group which you've met that are here tonight. Then we'll be able to read their paperwork, though. It's already attempted that. Like I said, it'll get better when it's black
or nothing.
Okay.
We, the voters of Lapine, exercise our power to the fullest extent possible under the Oregon Constitution laws of the state and enact this home rule charter presented to the voters of Lapine on May 17, 2011. And you have that all in your handouts. The first paragraph is kind of kind of what they all say. We, the voters of Lapine, Oregon. Now, this is a place, interesting on here, People are fighting over how you spell Lapine. This is where it becomes official. And so I was told it's L-A space capital P-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. So this makes that official. So it's kind of interesting. The charter will be referred to as the 2011 Lapine Charter. The name, the City of Lapine, Oregon, continues as a municipal corporation with the name City of Lapine. So those who have argued about spaces between them, that will be put to rest. The boundaries. The city includes all territory within its boundaries as they now exist or are legally modified. The reason they put that, the boundaries will change over time. You don't change your charter. The city will maintain as a public record an accurate and current description of the boundaries. The city has all powers that the Constitution, statutes, and common law of the United States and Oregon expressly or impliedly grant or allow the city as fully as the charter specifically enumerated each of these powers. The charter will be liberally constructed, so to exercise fully all the powers possible under the charter in the United States, and that means it's broad in nature. Distribution. The Oregon Constitution reserves initiative and referendum powers as to all municipal legislation to city voters. That means that you can take something to a vote of the people if it's something that we've enacted. You can't take something to the overturns of state law. But say we enacted in Madras recently, the city was building the city hall. And so they took it to a vote to change the charter that would keep them from doing that. It didn't pass. But because it was a local decision, they were trying to do it. There are some laws on what you could take forward. But if the city, there are some cities that have passed charter amendments that say you can't spend more than $5,000 without going to vote of the people. Kohler has a charter amendment that says you cannot expand the urban growth boundary without a charter or going to the vote of the people. So what you'll find is, over time, you get to the very last page on a charter, cities have two or three little things that have been added. Each one has their own little makeup. Some don't have any, but it's kind of activists will get into a community, and they will, it's the issue of the day, and they will run it to the voters, and sometimes they get them amended. But voters have to be cautious. The charter vests all other city powers in the city council, except as a charter otherwise provides. The council has legislative, administrative, and quasi-judicial authority. The council exercises legislative authority by ordinance. So when we pass an ordinance, they are doing the legislative authority. That's kind of like the Oregon legislature. That's higher up, they're passing an ordinance. When we do a resolution, that's more administrative. That's like an ORS. That's the legislature passes a law, then the agencies help work on the rules. So it's kind of interesting how this all works. And then you do the quasi-judicial authority by order. We just the other day, because of the BioGreen issue, did our first order that we're going to call it up to review, which is next Tuesday night. And we had to do an order. And the reason we did an order was it was quasi-judicial, which means we act as a court or a judge. And that's why your current councilman can't talk to you about BioGreen as of now. Just no more than you can walk up to a circuit court judge and start talking to them about a court case when you're at Dairy Queen. Because they are going to be acting as a judge and a jury. Now, prior they might have talked, but as of now, if my counsel is doing what they should, if you went up to Adele and started talking about BioGreen, she would just decline the discussion. Because she's acting as a judge. Not quite. We're not giving them a word. But it'll be kind of fun. That'll be our first time. I hope we Pines have that. Do you think?
No.
Yeah. So we'll be doing that next Tuesday. The council may not delegate its authority to adopt ordinances. So only they can do that. The council, this is where it gets fun. The council consists of a mayor and four council members nominated and elected from the city at large. We debated seven. And there was some discussion back and forth, and we went from seven. Culver just went to seven. Now, they just celebrated their 100th year. So they had five for 98 years. And we thought, I think, that maybe for a year or two, five might work here. Culver waited 98 to go to seven. Sisters, it's done 100 years, still five. The bigger cities have seven. And because up until this last election, you had never had anyone non-elected is what I've been told. In other words, if you had three openings, you had three run. Everyone, I don't know if that's true, man. You hear these things when you're out running around town, so I don't know how much is still true over about 3 years ago. But I don't think until this last election, anyone had never got elected. So when you add more positions too, that's more bodies to fill. So the group felt go with four councilmen and a mayor. And right now, and you can't see this little check mark over there. There's a little red check mark. They're likely from the city at large. When we're done, we're going to go into, if you decide to have someone outside the city serve on the council. So that little check there, and I only got a couple, three checks, and I'll tell you when we come to it. That wording has to change because right now it says they all have to come from the city. And we would work on that if this group decides to do it differently, and they want to hear from you. The mayor presides over and facilitates council meetings, preserves order, enforces council rules, and determines order of business under council rules. This was one that I didn't expect. The mayor only votes to break a tie and has no veto power. With the consent of council, the mayor appoints members of commissions and committees established by ordinance or resolution. The mayor must sign all records of council decisions. The mayor serves as the political head of the city. Now, the mayor only votes to break a tie. Most cities, it's probably leans toward they would vote just like they do now here, where they would vote on all issues. Some cities, the mayor only breaks a tie. The end result is the same. Because if you think about it, there's five of you. If three of you vote one way, say, and one votes the other way, and the mayor votes the other way, it's still the three win. There's no combination that affects anything unless you're 2-2. And so the result is the same. And the idea is the mayor then can kind of run the meetings And doesn't always have to make a big speech and get into the kind of the trenches in the debate, because their vote won't make a difference. Now, if it's something they feel strongly about, they may make a speech about it and very well tell you where they stand. But the consensus was the mayor would only vote when there's a tie. Council president, the first meeting of each year, the council would elect a president from its group. The president presides in the absence of the mayor and acts as the mayor when the mayor is unable to perform. Rules, the council must by resolution adopt rules to govern its meetings. We have some now, and then we'll probably need to update and look into that.
Do you want the questions after or as we come?
What do you guys want?
What was the question
that you really... It was asking, do you want to ask questions as we go through it, or even make comments? Whatever you prefer. Or go through it once and then come back page by page and see if anyone has a comment. Okay, so what we'll do is start back and say, does anyone want to comment, and you can ask them. Because I want them to speak about how they came to the decision they did. Meetings. The council must meet at least once a month at a time and place designated by its rules, and may meet at other times in accordance with the rules. But you are required at least meet once a month. Quorum. The majority of council members is a quorum, but a smaller number may meet and compel attendance of absent members as described by council rules. We kind of have fun with that in a little bit. But one of the rules, I either lobby the legislature, and legislators sometimes would go out to an OSU baseball game and they didn't want to be there for a meeting, but they would have to send the state police to get them. Because the Republicans one time all walked out so that the Democrats couldn't run the meeting. So it's a little game. So I guess here, if everyone runs over to a baseball game for the Hawks, you will send the sheriff. vote required. The express approval of the majority of a quorum of the council is necessary for any council decision, except when the charter requires approval by a majority of the council. Which I don't think you'll have that. Interestingly, the Maskus allowed a member to vote by speakerphone. And we didn't go down that path, did we? Yeah. Ordinances. Ordinances are kind of our highest level of rules and law. The council exercises its authority by adopting ordinances. The enacting clause for an ordinance must state the city of Lapine's ordains. Except as authorized by subsection D, adoption ordinance requires approval by a majority of the council at two meetings. So all ordinances have to be approved at two meetings. The council may adopt an ordinance at a single meeting by unanimous approval of at least a quorum of the council. So everybody there has to vote for it, provided the ordinance is available in writing to the public at least 1 week ahead. So if you get it out a week ahead and you have unanimous approval, you can do it in 1 week. And that is true of most all cities. Any substantive amendment to a proposed ordinance must be read aloud or made available in writing to the public before the council adopts the ordinance at the meeting. After the adoption of the ordinance, the vote of each member must be entered into the council minutes. The difference with that is you have to call them by name. If any of you have been to our meetings where they call everyone by name, most cities don't do that. It takes time, and it's just, you just say, all those in favor, and if three people raise their hand, or two of them, it passes 3-2. Your vote isn't recorded as to who voted how. That is the way most cities kind of do it. It just adds things quicker and so on. So, but under an ordinance, you must go by roll call. So it's recorded. After adoption ordinance, the city custodian of the records must endorse it with the date of adoption, custodian's name and title. Effective date. Ordinances normally take effect on the 30th day after the adoption or a later date. You could put a later date if it could, or sooner if it contains an emergency clause. Resolutions, it's the same wording except you put the city of Lapine resolves as, and it can be approved at one meeting. Because this is a little lower level of rule, a little lower level of law. The other one, remember, the ordinance required two meetings. This requires one. And the other rules are the same. As a, when you look at effective date, however, on a resolution, it takes effect the date of approval or a later date if you want. There's not the 30-day issue. Now you get into the quasi-judicial. The council will normally exercise its authority by approving orders, approving clause for them states. The city will find orders as follows. Approval and order, decision requires for this council at one meeting. Any substantive amendment is a lot of the same wording. After approval and order or other council, quasi-judicial decision, the vote of each member must be entered to in the council minutes. Again, you have to have everyone's vote. Because the custodian signs it, orders and other quasi decisions take effect on the date of the final approval or on a later date. Elections. The term of the council in office when the charter is adopted is the term in which the council was elected. That first time, it takes a couple years to get this worked through, because we have people who are just elected. And so it'll work its way through the system. At each general election after adoption, three councilors will be elected for four-year terms. That should say two. That needs to say two. The template charter was meant for a seven-person council, six and the mayor, and I changed it one place. That needs to be two. Two councilors will be elected for four-year terms. The term of the mayor, when this charter is adopted, will go through the same kind of meeting it out process. But every other general election after adoption, the mayor is elected for 2 years. So what you'll have is, you'll have, just like you did the other day, you have three people. What you'll have is two running for council. Two will be elected to the council, and then the mayor is running. So three people will get elected. These two have a four-year term. The mayor has a two-year term. Then 2 years later, the mayor has to run again, and the two other councilmen have to run. And so you always have a majority of the council running. Again, every city does it that way, basically, unless you've got some other. If the mayor was a four-year term, which we debated, then you would have two running one time and three the next. And the thought is you'd like to have a majority every 2 years. And so you make the mayor a two-year term in order to accomplish that.
Say again, so it's only the mayor that gets the 2 years?
Yes.
Period.
That's correct.
The other two people running in that same election are there for a four-year period.
That's correct.
So you have consistently for 4 years, you have consistently two people.
That's correct.
Not three.
Theoretically,
two.
Yes. You could have three new people every election.
Okay.
Well, city elections must conform to state law, except as the charter orders provide. Otherwise, all elections for the city are all nonpartisan. So you're not a Republican or Democrat. The mayor and each councilor must be a qualified elector under state law. They have their own definition. And this is, again, reside within the city for at least 1 year immediately before the election or appointment. Now, if we go this one person could be out, that position, of course, that would be changed. We'll have to reword it to where that person doesn't have to live in the city. They have to live within what you decided, 7 miles within 1 year. So that will have to be changed if we go that route. We're going to come back, Bill.
I'll wait.
Okay. No person, maybe a candidate at a single election, more than one office. You can't run for mayor and the council to secure your position. You've got to run for one or the other. Neither the mayor nor council may be employed by the city. The council is the final judge of the election and qualifications of its members. In other words, there was a person who ran as a writing in Madison. You have to be there for a year. And they told him he couldn't run originally because when he went in to apply, you have to do that 2 or 3 months ahead. He said, well, basically, you haven't been here a year. Well, then when they got reading further, it's when the election was, which was November 2nd. So when he was ending his petitions in March, he'd only been there 6 months or 7 months. Now, his story was that he had moved in at noon on November 2nd the year before. So he beat it by a few hours. He didn't win. So you do have to live, you know, for a year. The council must adopt an ordinance prescribing the manner in which you're nominated to run. Currently, you have to get 8 signatures to run.
Six.
Under ordinance, one of the things we'll do later is you can change it. We can just take what you have now. You could say you want them to get 10 signatures. You know, that in. The reason they don't put that in there is they want you to be able to, over time, if you want to change it, you can, and you don't have to go out and amend the charter. So you'll need to be able to decide. Right now, I guess if it's that number, that's what it is. But that can be changed. The term of officer elected at a general election begins at the first council meeting of the year immediately after the election. So when we meet on the second Wednesday, the new councilmen are not councilmen on the 2nd of January. They take office at the first council meeting of the year. Some people think it's January 1. The mayor and each council must swear or affirm that they to faithfully perform the duties of the office to support the constitutions. Okay, vacancies. How do we fill a vacancy? How do we first get a vacancy? Obviously, if you pass away, they allow that. Adjudicated incompetence. So you can be incompetent, you just have to go through a process to make it official. Or recall from office. Those are automatic, basically. And then, upon the declaration by the council, so this is more, kind of the council has a little more control. A failure to qualify for the office within 10 days of the time the term of office to begin. So I guess if you can't prove you were a resident, you know, like you're getting this argument over, did I live there a year and all of that, if you can't kind of prove all of that, within 10 days after your term begins, you can be removed. Absence from the city for 30 days within a 60-day period without council consent. We changed that. I worked on this last night at home, making those changes because that has been a funny one. That's in the law that comes from the state, but it is a little more. We had so many people we like to go places. You come to this group can explain why they wanted it this way. But you can be gone for 30 days within a 60-day period. You just can't be gone 60 days. But you can with council consent. I think that would be a zero like that being a snowbird for 6 months and then saying, I'm on the council. The council can say no to that. But it would only be the council. Ceasing to reside in the city, there's a little check mark over there next to the three. Again, we'll have to change that. Ceasing to reside in the city on positions 1 through 4, because position 5, say, may be a rural resident. So it would apply to the other 4, but not the 1. Ceasing to be a qualified elector, and I suppose that is in, whatever their state rules are. Conviction of a public offense punishable by loss of liberty. I'm assuming that means go to jail. Resignation, if you resign, or removal under Section 33, which you will come to. Filling vacancies, a mayor or councilor vacancy will be filled by appointing by majority of remaining councilmen, which is how you do it. Done it a lot in Lapine. So the council appoints somebody. The term of that office will run until they expire, until that person's position they fill expires. If a disability prevents a council member from attending, or a member is absent from the city, a majority of the council may appoint a councilor pro tem. I guess they could fill in for them. I guess that's saying. I've never seen that done, but, you know, it could happen. The city manager. The office of city manager is established as the administrative head of the city government. The city manager is responsible to the mayor and the council for the proper administration of all city business. The city manager will assist the mayor and council in the development of city policies and carry out policies established by ordinances and resolutions.
Okay.
Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Okay. Everyone normally says they can hear me. A majority of the council must appoint and may remove the manager. The appointment must be made without regard to political considerations and solely on the basis of education and experience and competencies and practices of local government management. The manager need not reside in the city. Now, we spent some time on that. Most cities don't have a residency requirement. However, Sisters requires you to be in the Sister School District. So you don't have to live in the city, but they want you close. But we looked at Bethel High School District, but that goes a long way, and so they didn't like that. And we talked about a couple other scenarios, getting so many miles from the city so that the person has a little more flexibility. And then some of them said you have to live in the city unless the council says you don't have to. The bottom line is the council can hire who they want. And if you feel strongly about it, and the person says, I live in Bend and I'm not moving, then you don't need to hire them. if that's a big issue to you. So we felt at the end, keep it like this, the council at the time and the higher managers will decide those kinds of issues. And this keeps it flexible. The manager may be appointed for a definite or indefinite term and may be removed at any time by the majority of the council. The council must fill the office by appointment as soon as practicable after the vacancy occurs. So that's kind of interesting. So when you have a vacancy, I learned something on this because I didn't know that. So saying is that if you have a vacancy, you got to appoint someone to be it. When I was mayor of Matters, I became the acting administrator for a few months, less than a year, while they went through the process. But, so the way that reads, that you know, if you fire someone, that's generally, or even if they quit, you're going to have to appoint someone to fill that as soon as practical. Now, we'll see what that means. The manager must attend all council meetings unless excused by the mayor. Make reports and recommendations to the mayor and council about the needs of the city. Administer and enforce all city ordinances as well as regulations, franchises, leases, contract permits, and other city decisions. Appoint, supervise, and remove city employees. Organize city departments and administrative structure. Prepare and administer the annual city budget. Administer city utilities and property. Encourage and support regional intergovernmental cooperation. Promote cooperation among the council, staff, and citizens in developing city policies and building a sense of community. Perform other duties as directed by the council. Delegate duties but remain responsible for all acts of the subordinates. So that means if I'm running the Valdez and I'm in my room sleeping and the guy running the boat runs it in the ground, you're still in trouble. So that covers everything if you look at that list. You know, the manager has no authority over the council or over the judicial functions of the municipal judge, which we don't have right now, but we'll get to that part. The manager and other employees designated by the council may sit at council meetings but have no vote. The manager may take part in all council discussions. When the manager is, here's I think what talked about your point, so when the manager is temporarily disabled from acting as a manager or when the office of manager becomes vacant, the council must appoint a manager pro tem. The manager pro tem has the authority and duties of the manager, except that a manager pro tem may not appoint or remove employees over the council approval. No council member may directly or indirectly attempt to coerce the manager or a candidate for the office of manager in the appointment or removal of any city employee or in administrative decisions regarding city property or contracts. Violation of this prohibition is grounds for removal from office by a majority of the council after a public hearing. In council meetings, councils may discuss or suggest anything with the manager relating to city business. So you can't coerce the city manager into things. Municipal court judge. A majority of the council may appoint and remove a municipal judge. A municipal judge may hold court in the city as such places as the council directs. The court will be known as a municipal court. All proceedings of this court will conform to state laws governing, you know, justices of the peace and justice courts. All areas within the city and areas outside the city as permitted by state law are within the territorial jurisdiction of the court. Municipal court has jurisdiction over every offense created by city ordinance. That's how you get better kind of ways to enforce your city ordinances, because it's always hard for cities to get the counties to enforce your ordinances. The court may enforce forfeitures and other penalties created by such ordinance. The court may also jurisdiction under state law unless limited by city ordinance. And the municipal judge may render judgments and impose sanctions on persons and property, order the arrest of anyone accused of an offense against the city, commit to jail or admit to bail anyone accused of a city offense, issue and compel obedience of subpoenas, compel witnesses to appear and testify, and jurors to serve for trials before the court, penalize contempt of court, issue processes necessary to enforce judgments and orders of the court, issue search warrants, and perform other judicial and quasi-judicial functions assigned by the ordinance. The council may appoint and remove municipal judge pro tem. The council, this is where we would be now. The council may transfer some or all of the functions of the municipal court to an appropriate state court. So what you're doing is you're putting this all in the charter. But where we're currently not running a court, and I doubt that January 1st you're going to start a court, the state of Oregon runs it. And that's what a lot of cities do. When you try to run a municipal court, you'll find it can be problematic. It sounds good because you're going to get some tickets and some income off speeding tickets, but then the first thing that happens is someone comes in and wants a court-appointed attorney. And so you end up with this little justice of the peace book there trying to run things, and a lot of cities have gotten out of it, but some bigger cities do it because it can make them some money. And some of them done both, and they go back and forth every few years. So my anticipation is, and that's a decision of the council, that I doubt that that's going to start right away if this is approved. We will let the state handle it. Compensation. The council must authorize compensation of its city officers and employees as part of its approval of the annual city budget. The council may by ordinance provide for procedures governing the making, altering, vacating, or abandoning of a public improvement. That gets into vacating roads and things. A proposed public improvement may be suspended for 6 months upon remonstrance by owners of the real property to be specially assessed for the improvement. The number of owners necessary to suspend this action determined by ordinance. And this would get into some local improvement districts and things if you did those. Special assessments. The procedure for levying, collecting, and enforcing special assessments for public improvements and other services charged against real property would be governed by ordinance. So it's not in here. We do it by ordinance. City indebtedness may not exceed the debt limits imposed by state law. A charter amendment is not required to authorize city indebtedness. So if we went and borrowed money, it's not a violation and you don't have to go back to the charter. Ordinance continuation. All ordinances consistent with this charter in force when it takes effect remain in effect until amended. So all the ordinances you passed since the city form stay on the books as long as they're not in conflict with this. So you don't have to start them all over again. And I don't doubt that there's any, who knows, there could be some. You'll find out over time, but you don't have to go redo every ordinance. All charter provisions adopted before this charter takes effect are repealed. We never had a charter, so we have no charter provisions. That would be when you repeal it 10 to 20 years from now. The terms of this charter are severable. If any provision is held invalid by a court, then invalidity does not affect any other part of the charter. That's going to be important if we go down with out-of-town persons. So if they kind of strike that, at least the other stuff stays. And then the time is effect. The charter will take effect July 1st, 2011. We'll vote on it on May 17th. It will take effect July 1st because that's the start of your next budget. Now, council, and then we'll come back to all of this. Council members from outside the city, you know that's been an issue that's been raised, and a lot of people have suggested. And what the decision of the group has been is kind of called bullet points, and the reason this all has to be legally figured out and put in there. First of all, there's no city in Oregon that has out-of-town people serving on their city council. So there is no, you can't go review anyone else's charter, because it doesn't exist. Nor has it ever been tried and went to the courts. So there's no court case law to study. So you are branching down a path of unknown kind of things. There is a ghost town rule that allows Shanico and Greenhorn and, I don't know, two or three, if you are a ghost town. We are not a designated ghost town, and I don't think our chamber director wants us to be. So we don't qualify under that exemption. So, this group worked through, these are the issues if they decided to go that route. One council position would be available to an outside resident. A city or non-city resident would be eligible to run. In other words, you're going to have the one position. It's open to a non-city resident, but you don't just say only non-city residents can run. Non-city residents must reside within 7 miles of the city of Lapine at the time of the filing for the position. That got into my thing thinking about, well, I'm going to move into the city. But I'm going to move within 7 miles. I currently live in Bend, so I'm out there in March doing my petition. And I think I'm going to move in when you vote on me in November. And I've already moved. So I thought, you know, you're going to have to do this to where when they're out getting their signatures, they have to live within that 7 mile radius. And this is some of the details that we will flesh out further and work on. The term would be 4 years. There was some discussion of having two, but then that throws up this mixing thing because we went and made the mayor 2-year terms. This probably requires the council positions to be numbered, because you're going to have to vote, that one has to be a separate number. Now, one of the things we've talked a little about, and actually Scott asked me today, and you know, we discussed, but then you're going to number them all, because the mayor, you're going to run head-to-head. You know, the mayor runs, if you don't want to run against the mayor. This outside position has to be, because it's one standalone position, it's going to have to be head-to-head. That means the other three, are they going to be at large like we do now, where you just took the top three vote getters? In this case, once in a while you have two people running, or you'd like the top two. Or you go ahead and number them and you always run head-to-head. The opposite year, when you're doing this county residence, you would only have one other city resident, because the way you split this up, the mayor is running, the county person is running, that only leaves one other position. So in effect, it's head-to-head. Then 2 years later, you wouldn't have that county person running, you'd have two city positions running, and do you want that to then be top two? So I'm thinking you may want to head down your number 1 through 5, and I'm going to run for position 3 in this election, I'm going to run for position 4. You could do it either way. Only city residents are eligible to sign the petition, so the fact that I'm running as an outside person, I must come into the city to get my 6 or 8 signatures. Out-of-town folks can't sign the petition. You have to get 6 people in town, currently, or 8, to do it. When a vacancy occurs, resident and non-resident electors eligible for appointment. And the reason I put it, the problem would be if no non-residents wanted it, you can't just leave it as a vacancy. So it's kind of like you need to open it up. You know, here's my thought. I was thinking about, well, say it's a county person. Do you fill it with a county person? What if no county person wanted it? Or if a city person had it, but because that position is eligible for outsiders, I felt like you look at that one and you just say, it can be either or. Because you've got to keep this simple in a charter, that's the other problem. If you notice, that whole thing is how you run this whole city. And you go add several pages to just this issue, you're mucking up your charter, and so you need to try to make it simple. They are not eligible to be mayor, and that's actually doesn't really need to be there, because the mayor, you have to run for that position, and you're not talking about making that position eligible for mayor. The reason we talked about that was if we appointed our mayor like we do now, and they're on the council, you can have to make sure that they aren't eligible. You could not appoint them as mayor. And if you vote on all issues, we've talked about, do they only vote if they're on property, do they vote on non-money issues, and again, that's too complicated, there's no way to check all that out. What doesn't cost money? Almost every discussion, to a degree, has a financial impact of some type, and you would spend every meeting fighting over whether that's a money issue. So the thought was, by the group, that they vote on everything. Okay, now we'll worry about that. So, there. Mr. Chairman, you can run the meeting and I'll start at the first page. But that is the charter with kind of the plan B, if you go that way. The group tied on that decision, we had, just like tonight, we had 8 of us, and it was 4-4, and actually it was 2 city and 2 non-city on each side. It was this complete tie. So one of the things we want to do tonight is to hear from them. So,
yeah, before we, I guess, we'd like to hear your comments and your opinions. If you want the solicitor, I could give those to you, but before that, we want to hear from you. And I guess, please, if you have any comments, give your name, tell us whether you're a resident or not. Do we need the address? We need your address also.
Yeah, you need one of them over here.
Any piece of this?
I've been flying through it. It's not for everybody, so.
You
want to go down at the end there, man.
Come on. Ryan Marco, and my address is 5600 Cabrera.
Come down here. The microphone's actually here.
Yeah, microphone's over here.
And Vicki Jackson can't be here tonight. I want to make sure she gets this. Okay.
I was wondering if, I guess I pressed it by saying, when the town was set up, incorporated, and people were deciding whether they wanted to be incorporated and stuff, they made a lot of comments like, we want to retain small town feel. We want to be... We want to remain the Pine. We want to be different. We want to be independent. We want to be who we are. We don't want to be run by other people. And one of the ideas that somebody mentioned to me a while back, and I sort of grabbed hold of it, was we shouldn't just be a city like everybody else. We should be a town. Now, you are a city, as that's defined, but if there ain't anything wrong with being defined or named, it says the city of La Pine, the town of La Pine. Would that contribute just in... words, the feeling of what people are looking for, we're a town, because I don't think we, any of us aspire to be a big city. We want to be a small town with a bright future. So I just wondered if that was a consideration or even a possibility, or if there'd be any discussion or anything like that, or anything. So just throw it out.
Thank you.
Yeah, you
have
to take it right down. Questions like that. Well, you know, I'm sitting here thinking Baker City. I don't know if it says the city of Baker City. I don't know.
Well, there's towns in California that are called the town of something something. Yes.
We are a municipality, like it or not. That's what it means to be incorporated. We are a municipality. I am Jenny Woodruff, and a resident of La Pine. We're a city. City carries the weight of a municipality. A town is what you visit when you go on vacation. Oh, I'm going to go see that town out in the boondocks. I'm a city, and I'm proud to be a city. I didn't vote for us, but I'm proud to be a city now that everybody else said we should be a city. And I think the city of La Pine should not even be, the title should not even be discussed. It's been referred to as the city of La Pine since incorporation. It was billed as the city of La Pine. And I'm proud of the city of La Pine.
Thank you both. And we will look into that. I'm Douglas Ward, 52657 Pine Drive. I'm a resident of the city. I'm also a lame duck on the city council. Concerning the makeup of the council as far as having someone from outside the city limits be on the council, when that first came up, the argument was, not enough people that reside in the city are interested enough to participate. Well, the last election, with 3 seats and 7 candidates, pretty well threw that completely out. The people that live here, that voted for incorporation, at the 100-year celebration, we took a survey and asked the same question. 85% of those people surveyed said, no, we do not want a counselor from outside the city room. Number 3, I don't think it's the right thing to do. And number 4, if it's done, you're opening up a terrible can of worms, just got them brought up, and you're also looking at the fact that this may not pass with the voters. If it doesn't pass with the voters, you gotta start all over again, do it all over again, and it's another year and a half down the road. So what you've done here is really great, just as it is. Thank you.
When you said the survey, the 85% of the survey said no, how many participated in the survey?
73 people participated in the survey. Only 17 people from the city residents, they were at 85% no. The remainder were at 60% yes. So there was a wide variance there between the people who live outside and the people who live inside.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Karen Ward. I live in the city of Lapine. I'd like to ask two questions. Not that I'm against the city having an outside counselor. I think I might be against that person have voting rights. Okay? I think they could be there to add to the council by bringing things from the people that actually don't live in the city. But my main question here is, why would you make a mayor for a two-year term and make an outside counselor, whether they be a voting counselor or not a voting counselor, for 4 years? That doesn't make sense to me. If you're going to run an outside resident, why in the world would you not make your mayor 4 years? It takes a year to figure out what you're doing as a mayor. So they're only going to have 1 year with enough knowledge to where they're at a place where they're comfortable and the people are comfortable. That's a question in my mind, guys.
Thank you very much.
People
need to make comments that they want to make comments on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really how you do a hearing. You don't poll people. The problem is because you've got 8 or 9 people here, a poll of this group, you don't even want to start there.
No.
Because they're either council
members, and then we'll make some comments also. But yes. First of all, is this on the outside?
Yeah, I can comment on that. My recollection of how this all came about was that the business community, being that most of them are property owners, wanted to have they have a vested interest equal to someone who lives within the city who's a property owner. And I think that's why we were considering it, because of the vested interest. And I would caution you to take surveys too seriously. It's because, you know, surveys are a science, a multi-million dollar industry. And so, I mean, it's interesting, but beyond that, I wouldn't take that as scientific or anything like that.
In response, I would say, number one, if you're a business owner and do not live within the city, I'm Jenny Woodruff, Lapine resident. If you don't live in the city, you have the option of the Chamber of Commerce, which is a very viable organization. And that is where your energies can be utilized, is with your Chamber of Commerce. As far as surveys go, the biggest survey of all was made in that November 2006 vote that the citizens, the residents within the boundaries of the city of Lapine approved the incorporation and did not say, oh, maybe sometime down the line we'd like everybody else, all other 16,000 possible county residents in our area, to tell us what to do without giving us any money. It's my tax dollars that are going to this city. It's my tax dollars that paid for the comprehensive plan, for the traffic study, for the administration of this city. And it is my vote and my representative on the council who should be making the decisions for my money. And even though it's been said to you to disregard a survey that was taken at a 100-year celebration, that's still a very important survey. It's reaffirming that we want our citizens to run our government. And I'm not interested in this charter committee, which should have been made up of citizens, and there were enough on it, to have to go to court and pay my taxes in legal fees to defend a decision to have an out-of-area residence. And that's an entirely possible scenario. I don't have that kind of money. And I don't want what little money I contribute and my fellow residents contribute going to legal fees at all, ever.
Thank you. I have a question about that, the councilor out there. Do you know, councilor? Was that, I did not remember if that was, if they were eligible for the president of the council or not?
Well, that was not addressed.
Sorry, I have a better question.
We were talking up here that maybe that one not eligible.
You can't hear the question.
I can't hear.
Oh, yeah, can you speak up a little louder?
The question was whether or not the county resident, if we choose to go that way, would be eligible for the president. And we were just talking here, maybe that's something that we put in instead of mayor, we just switched that to president.
Yeah.
Lori Fleming, 50662, Deer Forest Drive in La Pine. I am not a resident of the city. However, my husband and I were both involved in the corporation. We sat at Frontier Days and we answered questions. And this is one of the things that the residents were very concerned about and that they have control and they did not want outsiders. And this was, you know, constantly. It was a big issue.
Add one more thing, because this is Jenny Woodruff. I want to address Gloria's remarks in that there are several committees that the council has formed that has invited all of the residents of the county in our area to participate in. Very important committees. Planning committees, utility committees, public works committees. All of those committees affect the entire area of La Pine, not just the city limits. And it's extremely important that those committees continue to have area residents, non-residents of the city, on them. Because their input is invaluable, just like it is with the Chamber of Commerce. They don't have any stipulation that you have to be within the city limits to be in the chamber. You only have to have your business or wish to participate as a member. That is truly a public place where residents and non-residents can affect the government of the city and allow themselves to be on the city's commission. And that is wonderful. In all of the hearings that the city council, since incorporation, have held, have asked for input from non-residents as well as residents. All the meetings that are held appreciate and encourage anyone who lives here to have input. And it's just like this one. You're encouraging it. But I would discourage you from wasting any more time considering having an outside counselor or giving the mayor a non-voting position. For Pete's sakes, he's a volunteer, he/she, just like the other four council members. They're all volunteers and all should have a vote on every issue, whether it's a tie or not. The opinion and the vote of the mayor is just as important as every other counselor. He's not special, he's shitty, they're not special, and they shouldn't have a right taken away from them. They have a right to vote. They've been elected to that council or appointed during an interim period. They have a right to vote on every issue.
Corey Fleming, I have a point of clarification. I wasn't really sure. You said a counselor cannot run for mayor?
No.
Would they?
That's the non-resident counselor.
No. Did you say when somebody was a counselor, they could not really run for mayor at the same
time? Yeah, so you can't run for two offices at once. If you were already in office, you probably could run for mayor. That's a guess. You could. I'm pretty sure you could run for mayor, I suppose. Then you become mayor, and then you create a vacancy. You can't be on the ballot. Your name can't be on this ballot twice.
Okay, that's what I was.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was.
Douglas Ford again. I have to agree with Mrs. Ribber on Section 8 under mayor, where it says the mayor only does the vacant tie of the council and has no legal authority. It would be my opinion that that entire line be completely taken out. The mayor is going to run for an office, just like the council is going to run for an office. Why would you want to take the right from the mayor to vote when the people voted the mayor to be on the council? Why would you want to take the right from the mayor to vote away? I don't think that, well, I'll offend anybody, but I don't think that makes any sense.
Thank you.
Kenny Shields, 51540 Shields Drive. Obviously city resident and also current mayor, but I'm speaking as a citizen now. I agree, and I thought about this after the last meeting when this came up, and I really didn't have an opinion about whether the mayor should be voting or non-voting, but I thought about it since then, and thought about it from my perspective as a citizen. I would like always, I think it's a good idea for the mayor to have a vote, because the people also have the right to know where the mayor's coming from, where the mayor stands on each issue. To me, that's real important.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments, especially on the non-resident?
Steve Martinez, 51435 Morrison, and I am a city resident. On the non-resident councilor position, I'll have to agree with Ms. Woodruff. On the possibility that this would be challenged in court. If we look at our file green right now, it's being challenged by someone outside of the Deschutes County. So I think someone will get a hold of this since it's, you know, the first time in the state's history that this would be attempted. Chances are it's going to get put to the test legally. And the other, my own opinion is that the citizens voted for the city to be represented by the people from the city, and if there aren't enough people to fill the council can continue with five councilors. There's no state law that says you have to have a full council. So just food for thought, and thank you.
Karen Wood, I'm a resident of the city. I did have one other little question that I left out before. I didn't mean to, but I did. You said 7 miles around the city. Does that mean you go 7 miles into another county?
Yes. It means you go 7 miles from the perimeter. The way it was stated, and we haven't come to a final, we have to have some down there. And it was 7 miles from a perimeter point, the closest perimeter point, to the city limit.
Like so you would go outside one county into another county?
It could, no.
Wow.
I agree with that. Well, there are cities with multiple counties. Mm-hmm. City of Gordon has at least two or three. Mm-hmm. But That's it. That's the answer.
Yes, we do.
I'm wondering if when a charter is put on the ballot, if they could put to a section on that addresses.
What was your name?
It's on McAfee. 518-64 Hollinshead Place. I was talking about the ballot, yeah. So when we put the charter on the ballot and then put an amendment to the charter saying about the addressing this issue about the city residents, and therefore that the voters would need to vote on this as a separate piece.
But you could do it as an amendment, because you can't amend something that doesn't exist. And it doesn't exist until it's approved. So you could amend it now. I'm thinking out loud, you know.
Right.
I have no clue with it. Could you put one of...
An addition?
Is there a way to put one on each of them? And then whichever one wins and
there are three options. I said no for everything.
So you have a charter with a resident and a charter without a resident. Would that cost any additional funds?
Yeah, I mean, not. I don't think it would be a big money issue doing it that way, but I'm trying to think of, and the reason I think it, I don't know if the charter was involved, but you know, when you see, the legislature did that, they're going to have a couple of them put a ballot measure out, and then they'll say, if this one passes, this doesn't happen, and so on. So I've seen that. Redmond just did it with the fire merger. And they said, they're going to lower their city tax rate by $1.20 or $1.30, whatever it was, and lock it into their charter. And then they have to think, you want to merge the fire district into Schutz Rural. But if the Schutz Rural merger didn't happen, the tax rate lock-in didn't happen. Now, you know, you have to be kind of careful when you start having a couple votes and things. You know, it becomes a little complicated. You always could come back. If it's this popular, you could always come back and try to amend the charter a year or two later and say, okay, now we want to go ahead and add this out-of-town person.
I'd like to insert us here a little bit. I'd be very surprised if we went that way. I think we're going to go one way or the other. And we've had a lot of comments, so I'd like to talk about some of the deliberations that we've gone through. First of all, there's a consensus that we cherish the outside residents from the city in the business affairs of the city. The deliberation was, do they have that authority by not being a city council member? And I think you mentioned we do have committees that outside residents are on, and they certainly have their influence. So on the side of not having, of having only city residents, the folks who voted that way believe that the non-residents have a lot of influence in the city anyway. I guess I'm going to have some of my personal opinion here, but it's almost compelling, like Spoon said, that not one city in the state of Oregon, or 200 cities, is doing this. We are unique in some things. The demographics of our small city and large population around it is not unique. We have cities of 200 or 300 that only have city residents. So on that side, I guess on the other side, I'd invite any comments from anybody, or any comments from anybody.
Well, I think, Ken, when we were all deliberating, and I want to just point out that we had a city resident and a non-city that were adamant to have non-city, this one non-city, and we had a city resident. I mean, it was right down the middle. It couldn't have been whatever. And all we're trying to do is do what is best for the city
and all of you, and that has been our ideas, and that's why all of your input is really, really important. But I think Ken brought up, because I was one way and he was another, and he just said, you know, we just need to open all of these other committees more to involve the greater area, to have more influence on the advisory boards of all this stuff. Because basically, and correct me if I'm not going to say this exactly your words, the council should just come in to vote on things. They review it and vote on it. You know, and let a nice joint effort of non-citizens, non-residents and residents make up the advisory board on as much as we can so that everybody's represented. And I thought that was a really nice thought also. Very good.
The point that Glenn was talking about was strictly that, and it was talked about right here, was my feeling was, I thought about this for a long time, because I understand as well as anybody the value that the citizen or the community provides to the city, and that part of the community is not citizens. We see it right here. There's plenty of it happening. But there are vehicles available. You've got the charter committee working here. There are 5 and 4. Okay? You've got the public works committee coming up. And that's a...
All of our committees have...
All of the committees, let me say it that way too, have a breakdown of outsiders and insiders. And it's just like this committee here. When we get done with what we our task has been set to us, to set forth, we are going to have a group of 5 and 4 that has presenting this to the city council to pass. What stronger position do you have to influence the people sitting around the table than that kind of participation in an event? Versus, you got one person on the city council that is a member that is from outside. It's one vote. It's one vote. He can talk all day. She could, and not have the influence on the council that the non-city residents have on this committee or any other committee.
Any other comments from the committee?
I would like to comment.
Sure.
I was going to say that I am from out of the city, and when Lapine was going to be incorporated, I was happy that we were all going to become a city, but I was sad to find out that because of water and certain money issues and stuff, whatever reasons, we weren't allowed to become part of the city at the time. No. And so, anyway, I just felt like I wanted to vote for a non-city resident to be able to be on the council. That's what I wanted. I was one of those guys. But now that I hear that it could be a judicial issue, I think I might vote in the other direction. I certainly do not want that. If that was intelligently brought up, I don't want to be jeopardizing the city with that. So that's just where I stand right now.
Before we say anything, we aren't going to make any decisions.
No, we're not going to make any
decisions. I'm outside the city limits, and I do pay city taxes because I have property in the city. So, but I want to be in corporation, and I definitely told Doc to get up and do it. I'm not sure. I think we're also thrilled when it's going to finally be incorporated. We all worked very hard at getting incorporated. I'm sorry,
we beat that one up pretty good. Do we have any more on that particular issue?
Sure, let's do it. Don Ryder, 16489 Charlotte Philly Drive. I'm a resident of the city. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't there 3 votes to incorporate the city? And 2 failed because they encompassed a lot of areas? The point is that a lot of the people who are outside the city right now had an opportunity to vote in the city
but the majority of people decided they didn't want the city. So shouldn't we consider more of the people that voted for the city, and they decided that they wanted a city, other than the people that said, hey, I'd like to see a city here, but I'm going to vote against it? That's something that I think should be considered.
Just, you know, I want to just read this. This is from our legal counsel, and I thought maybe share it with you on this topic. Based on our interpretation of applicable Oregon law discussed above, which is this issue, the city may, through the municipal charter, enable non-residents to serve on the city council. The Supreme Court, in creating the LeGrand test, intended to reserve for cities the power and authority to decide upon the organization of their government by holding that state statutes addressing city structure impinge on cities' home rule powers. We believe that whether or not a city council member must be a resident of the city is procedural matter pertaining directly to the organization and structure of the city's government. As such, it is this the subject of local control. Further, we believe enabling a non-resident to serve on the city council would not trigger an overriding concern at the state level, justifying the state's need to safeguard the interests of private persons or entities to the extent that it operates to limit non-residents from holding city office. We believe that would impinge on the city's municipal charter authorizing non-residents to hold city office. As such, pursuant to Article as interpreted by in the LeGrand case, the city municipal charter will govern. Please note that this issue of whether an Oregon city may authorize non-residents to serve on its city council through its charter has not been ruled on by the Oregon courts. Our interpretation of ORS 2221.1, home rule provisions of the Oregon Constitution and case law in this contest is subject to legal challenge and scrutiny. So what he's saying is, they think it probably could pass muster. Right. But since it's never, and that's how laws are made, you know, that's how you know, since it's never been, went to a trial, it doesn't matter who you hire an attorney, they can't go to a case law to check it. So, now, yeah, they think it's okay, but they don't know.
And that's their interpretation.
That is their interpretation.
And that is where you were.
Yeah, it's going up first.
Yeah. I'm Dan Burke with 5160 Pedro. Just a couple observations on this. I guess if you have one counselor out of four or five, you know, that are outside the city, their vote could easily be overridden by those within the city. So it's not a whole lot of risk at being taken over by the outside. So I think that sort of, you know, mitigates that concern. But it does give them a little opportunity to have a little more of an influence. The other thing, this is just sort of way up in left field, but what dictates, and you may know, or somebody else may know, what dictates who votes within the city? It's interesting we talk about the money investment, which I understand that, but a whole lot of the money that comes into the city is from non-residents. It's business owners, it's people who have investment property, people who own just their land, and they have a great investment, you know, in the city. They pay into the city, they pay for attorney's bills, they pay for everything that goes on, along with the residents. And I don't have real strong feelings, but I think I'm really glad that you're taking a good look at this overall. It does sort of complicate it, but I just get back to the thing where I like us to think outside the box. Why do you have to do everything like all the other 200 towns in Oregon? You know, why can't we do things our way? If it makes sense. And there are a whole lot of people outside the city that love this town, this city. They care about, they love the Pine. Maybe their kids live inside and they live outside, or they live outside and, you know, vice versa. And so they feel really connected. And a lot of them feel disenfranchised a little bit because they don't have a whole lot to say. And just in this last election, several people said, I can't vote for you, Dan. Sorry. I wish I could. I care about the city. That kind of thing. So I'm glad you're considering it, and whatever decision we make is fine with me, but I just feel like we should look at all the options and not be threatened by potential judicial stuff either, as much as my good friend Stu had a good comment, and I appreciate that. It's just, we gotta do the right thing. We can't just do the thing that is less dangerous because we never get sued.
Thank you. I think we got it.
Yeah. The other thing, if you do go with the outside residents, the only thing that will change on that, you've got that 7 mile area, and I would add and be a resident of Deschutes County.
Deschutes? We did discuss that quite a bit.
That would eliminate everybody from Klamath or Lake or whatever.
Yeah, I realize that several of the members that are on the city council right now on businesses, but what Dan was addressing about, you know, I see businesses as having a special interest when it comes to business fees and SDCs and that sort of thing. So they would have to really walk a fine line as far as they would be voting on what their businesses might be paying. So the residents don't have any choice. The taxes go up, they have to pay them. But the businesses, they would be in a position to determine some things that could affect what they pay. And I see that as a little bit of a conflict of interest.
Are you talking about a business owner?
Yes. It's been brought up that business owners should have a right to, you know, be on the council. They live outside, but they have a business inside, and so they should be able to sit on the council because they have a business. But I see that as a little bit of a problem maybe at times.
Well, we discussed that, and we excluded businesses. We made it an individual. If we went with a non-resident, it would be an individual, business owner or not.
Okay. I also want to say, you know, being a small, right now, you know, it's very easy for somebody to approach the city council. I can see it many, you know, years down the road when it gets bigger or whatever, it might be more difficult, but right now, it's just not that big of a problem. If people want to, they can always get in here.
One more time.
One last time. And I promise on this Jenny Woodruff. I'm very concerned that this charter is it's supposed to serve the provisions and procedures that best serve our community. And that community is represented by the people who voted to incorporate. Everybody else had their chance. They turned it down innumerable times. This small little city was voted in by 600 people. And these are the people who are paying the taxes that have no choice, that are giving the money to a council who has put together a budget committee that by law must have residents that reside within the community. And every decision that the council makes is reflected in that budget. Every single decision it makes, there are dollars behind it, and those are the city resident dollars, the property taxes. And that's why it's so important that it be a council of residents. We don't need 7 residents. Let's not make a heck of a hurdle. Keep it at the 5 residents. Give the mayor the vote. It's fine with me if we want to elect a mayor, but he gets a vote, preserves his right, and I have transparency in government. I know how every single one of those councilors and the mayor think and vote on everything. I won't say
anymore. Thank you again. Have we beat this? Very last comment. Douglas Ward again. Douglas Ward, last comment. We need to do this thing right.
Mm-hmm.
The first time.
Mm-hmm.
Do it right. Do what is right.
do what the people who voted to incorporate the city want us to do. We don't want to stick our neck out, run off on a crazy line, and end up spending thousands and thousands of city tax dollars to an attorney to defend this thing in the courts. That would be just insanity. Number one, we don't have
money.
Okay. So let's do it right. Let's do it the right way. The right way is to have five councilors, all residing within the city limits, and to have the mayor elected with full voting powers. That's just my opinion as a resident of the city.
Okay, thank you all very much.
We didn't hear from that woman over here. I'd be curious to hear what her opinion is.
I'm an newcomer observationist. I don't have enough information to gather to really make any comment. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Do we have, we did beat this up, we expected this to be the thing we beat up. Are there any comments on any other piece? Let's put the room to rest.
Oh, it's done.
Okay.
This is on another issue.
It's section 13, under vote required. I'm very confused because I don't understand what it means to have a majority of a quorum. And then further into the document, you discuss ordinances and resolutions, etc., passing with majority. So I feel like there's a terminology problem in what is a majority of a quorum and when a quorum is called for and when a majority is called for. So we can start off
with wrong, but I believe a quorum is a majority of the council. So you could have a quorum, you got five members, you could have a quorum with three.
Yes.
The majority of that quorum would be two.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's what it's saying. What it's saying is, three people can be a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll conduct, there's a 2-to-1, stuff will happen. However, when you get to a ordinance, 2-to-1 won't pass it, because that isn't, and not two, voting for it, isn't a majority of the council. So, one, three people establish a quorum, but when you're passing ordinances, what they're saying is they don't want two people passing ordinances. You do it when two guys are hunting, and you know it, and you put it up that night to get it approved in the darkness of winter. And so, that's what it is. So, and that's a very good question.
And so, when we follow through looking at, let's look at the, where's the resolution?
Resolution is actually right after ordinances.
Section
18. Council will normally exercise its measures and resolutions, it may not say that because they'll allow three people. To do a resolution. This resolution is a lower level of law.
All right, let's look at section 32, filling vacancies.
Okay.
And see if we're saying what we mean to say there.
Okay, a mayor or council vacancy will be filled by appointment by a majority of the remaining council. So you'd have four, theoretically.
I
mean, usually you wouldn't have two vacancies.
But you could. And we could.
Well, state law, right? There's been one person, and there's a whole thing where the state appoints and does all that. But let's assume for the sake of this argument that you have a vacancy. The appointee's term of office runs from appointment. There's a difference, council member appointing. Okay, so your question is, when they're filling a vacancy, they will be filled by appointment by a majority of the remaining council. So, if there's four left, and it votes 2-to-2, that person doesn't get elected.
It would also imply that if there was only three councilors showed up for that meeting that night, they couldn't vote on it, because it says a majority of the remaining councilors.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to have the four remaining councilors in place to vote on the thing.
I think you're right.
The part you had at the vote with those three.
What if the mayor can't vote?
Well, the way this reads, the way it reads,
we should have a tie.
You'd have to have those four. You couldn't sit there with three because this guy, this lady or man counselor was sick that night and the other one had resigned or whatever. You couldn't do it that night. You'd have to wait until that fourth person come back. The way the words are written in this page.
I think that's right.
It wouldn't matter what situated the three of them.
I think that, Rick, if you're talking about filling a vacancy and you have two and two, is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, if you had two and two, if that person wouldn't get appointed, they'd be defeated.
Okay, and if they're deadlocked, indefinitely.
Yeah.
I think that happened one every time the fire district, it would go to the county commission.
Wouldn't it? I've been deadlocked before on appointing a vacancy, and they tried it, and he came back and tried it again, and eventually, we agreed.
That there is an alternative.
At some point, it goes to the county and the state. You can, can't.
Rick, that would only apply if you only had one applicant, wouldn't it? If you had more than one applicant and one of the other applicants.
Well, it really wouldn't matter. Someone's going to have to nominate appointing person X.
Right.
And that person, if it was two to two, that person defeated because two, a tie is no.
Yeah.
So then you try again maybe, you know.
Or another first person.
Yeah, another person, so you can get some consensus or a majority.
Is that the same reading you get into Section 33, City Manager, Item B? Where the council must appoint and may remove the manager, a majority of the council. Is that the same position that you are in for the city manager that we just...
It would take...
No.
Because it says up above, by a majority of the remaining council members.
Okay,
it doesn't say that down here in B.
So majority, what it's going to do is sound like it would take three votes on the city manager one, I suppose.
Okay.
This is technical. I think that's a typo down in the bottom line. Section 32, which says absence, I think that means absence. I'll just draft it.
Yeah, and the PowerPoint is for show-off purposes. You need to look at
it.
Okay. Yeah, and then again, the numbers would want there, because there are some things we took out that you haven't seen. And so we try to come in, and if we have add to a few paragraphs, because you do the out-of-district person, the numbers and all of that's going to change around and move. And, speak up.
Yeah. I can't, the microphone's not going to pick you up.
Okay, so this is Adele McAfee, Section 32. The last one is, if a disability prevents a council member from attending council meetings or a member is absent from the city, a majority of the council may appoint a council pro tem. But, so that doesn't say how long, so it would be indefinitely?
I think that would be up to the council. The council has the authority to excuse a member for an indefinite period. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I presume they would be able to pro tem that position for that indefinite period.
I took the question to mean, though, that once you appoint that person, where is anything in here that says you unappoint?
Well, when the person returns, they've been elected to the position. If the person returns and they're no longer disabled, and they show up, I mean, ultimately, I'm assuming they...
Okay. I think that was the question.
Well, technically, then I guess it could be years, right?
Well, until their term's up, because you couldn't do it past the term.
Right.
Because they're just filling the void of that person. You know, I've never heard of that happening, but I guess it
could. And I believe under Robert's rules, you could pro tem somebody meeting by meeting. You wouldn't have to do it for a specific period of time.
If you didn't want, you could get rid of that whole section. If you just say, you know what, you're either there, and you know, if you don't show up, we'll worry about it through the normal process. But as far as you being disabled and I'm out of town for 6 months and getting a pro tem, you know, I think that's something you could strike and wouldn't affect particularly the charter.
Absence from the city for 30 days within a 60-day period without council consent. I don't know if, because the councilor is elected by the people, I don't think the council can replace it. State law.
This is actually, other than all they did was remove two or three words, this is actually in the template charter, and all the cities we looked at have it, because I would have thought about the same thing. Bottom line, what it's saying is, someone isn't going to participate and doesn't show up, the council can.
I check it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I know, because I wouldn't have put that there. It didn't come from me.
I think once you're elected, the only way to replace someone is by recall.
Evidently, that's not true.
Okay.
It's
ironic that because all of the charters have it in it, it is in the template from the LLC, you would think this has been addressed. I'm not saying not to check it. I'm just saying that
I see what I can find.
The test of time, 242 cities.
It kind of makes sense because in law, abandonment.
It must be
that you kind of give it up, just like you need some rights, like you need property rights.
Well, the only other thing too is the position would be filled by the council for the remainder of that term.
Okay, Derek, look at number two. This is the model charter, and you'll see all the little footnote numbers and things, and then it talks about things. Oh, this one doesn't even have a footnote. Absence from the city for 30 days without council consent, or from all council meetings within a 60-day period. That was the model charter. And they changed that. They got lots of charters in here, but yeah, that's Damascus. Go down and see. These are all great. This is the process we did. We did this.
We are just small. Well, what we do, when the resident citizens adopt this, when the election, when they elect somebody, it's subject to these terms within the charter, so they know in advance. Well, they approve this, and so they agree to abide by this, and you're not really, going against their election of that person because of the terms that are established.
But I think state law would supersede
the charter. State law allows this, evidently. I mean, okay. And I think if you think about why, because if you really wanted to be powerful, two people, and some of these things, ordinances have them, require, all you do is stay away. Because you never would get, you would get a quorum, but you wouldn't get a majority necessarily, and so you become almost legal now.
State legislatures, they disappear in one session.
And they can't do it, but they can't do it, they get called in. So what this is saying is you can't blackmail the city. If you aren't going to show up for 60 days, you just don't have that right. And the council can remove you. Doesn't say you have to. You can go in and say, hey, I've got a 90-day sickness, and something happened, I had surgery and I can't be there. The council knows it's legitimate. The council could say, go ahead. But it gives you the right after 60 days. Now they did change it a little from this wording. I don't remember why, but I just typed them in as you did it.
We took out the without council consent after the 30 days and ran it all together and put it at the end. So it reads absence from the city for 30 days or from all council meetings within a 60-day period without consent of the council could be grounds for...
So that means you have to get consent for either.
Right.
They thought because if someone was gone, I guess, or however, yeah. I think because people like Mullen next door, why we dance at a time. We call this the Mullen.
All that at work. I would be there tonight.
Come on, you're like so.
There is a point here, if you look under 28 nominations, council must adopt an ordinance prescribing the manner for a person to be nominated to run for mayor of city council position.
And that would be ordinance, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if that's not the leeway where you would have to say that a person running would be just as it was said here that... this rule over here in 32, was it 32? Or being removed? I mean, she knew when they ran, because of the ordinance, that if they didn't come based upon this one, they would get removed. They're out.
Yeah.
The council can vote them out.
Well, section 11 says the council must meet once a month.
Say again, please.
Council must meet once a month, section 11.
At least.
So there must be something that links the two that disqualifies somebody if they have missed a certain amount of meetings, because you're right, that could be, that must have been challenged at one point.
Would you have something in your ordinance that says that when a person's nominated, I mean, he's got to get, let's say, 10 signatures, that he, she also agrees to comply with the charter?
Yeah, and I thought some of the rules that I'm in, and you have to take these, not to become overloaded. Yeah, one of the steps down the road would be figure out what rules, but the council gets to adopt that's an ordinance. So it's whatever's elected, and when those are adopted, they can be changed. You're exactly right. You could do some things in there. So we can go there and ask at some of the other cities, see what kind of rules they've put in. See, some charters are longer, and they have all these rules in it. And obviously, somewhere along the line, someone said, don't put that in the charter.
Yep.
Matters is charter so bad I wouldn't go near it. It was double this length, and it got into all kinds of stuff. I told the city manager and Mary, if there's charter in Oregon, they just haven't addressed it. But so yeah, that's I've noticed they're doing more by ordinance. If you think about it, some of you constitutional scholars in here, how many pages, if it was 8.5 by 11, is the Constitution? But if you think about it, we can run our entire country on the pretty thin documents.
Okay.
And we have to be careful here not trying to roll the what ifs. This document is not, you just have to, it will not answer all the what ifs. What if three people resigned at once? What if two resigned a week later, a third one resigned, and then you appointed one as a pro tem? Some stuff just isn't, and it will get worked out, that's why you have courts and everything.
Okay, move on.
Okay, one last thing. Section 8, where it talks about the mayor, currently in the ORS, the mayor is the ceremonial head. And they never changed it to political head. I was wondering what the difference is.
It says that he's the what? Now?
Now,
ceremonial
head.
Oh, okay.
And then this says political head. So what's the difference?
That was the wording in all the other charters. So I've never had any, I've never asked, or I mean, it just never came up.
Good question.
I think that, I mean, I think what it's probably saying, ceremonial sounds like they cut ribbons. And I think what this is saying is the mayor, especially when you're electing your mayor, The mayor is a political head of the city. And the mayor can go out and say, I think we should do X or I think we should do Y. Now, that doesn't mean the council's going to approve. They can outvote them 4-0 or 4-1, depending on your system. But they are the political head, and the mayor gets voted, the mayor speaks, and the mayor does things. It makes a stronger mayor, maybe, is why that, you know. So I'm not sure. I have not seen the ceremonial word. But I think under your system here, when you're not electing it from within, your mayor does increase in power. Then how effective it is. The mayor is more powerful because you're electing them, and the voters elected them. Here, when you're just appointing, it's a little more of who's been friends with who.
Yes.
The word ceremonial comes in at the Oregon statutes, which we have been, the city has been governed by.
Okay.
Period.
Well, so maybe that's in
that's
the
where
essence.
The word ceremonial came from.
And that word, you could change that word to ceremonial.
I think if you're going to elect a mayor, then if the citizens are going to approve electing a mayor separately from councilors doing their own election, then they need to view that person as having a political position. I agree with the word political, absolutely. And the one part of this section I puzzle over because I haven't worked it through in my head is the mayor appointing members of commissions and committees. That means that when I, as Joe Gross citizen, apply for a planning commission position, it will then be up only to the mayor.
Now, if you look at the first sentence, this is an odd one to me, yeah. With the consent of the council. And what that's saying, I think, is that ultimately, the mayor could give the list to the council. And then the council could reject people. But in other words, it isn't really up to the council to come up with the list. The mayor can come up with the list. But if three of the five don't want that person, the governor, I'm on a state commission, the governor appoints me to the commission. However, it has to be approved by the Oregon Senate. I had to go to the Oregon Senate and testify. And if Betsy Johnson and that group didn't want me there, then they vote you down. It's the same. The mayor is the governor in this case. They get to help put the list together. But ultimately, the council is the authority. I think under the reality of the system here, you're going to put an ad in the newspaper like we do now. You're going to get names in, and the council is ultimately going to.
I'd like to ask, we heard one comment about town and city. I'd like to ask if there's anybody else here who has an idea about or has an opinion about whether we should be, based upon Dan's comments regarding, you know, your small town feel, that was always the idea of calling ourselves a town or a city.
Only the various entities refer to them as the League of Oregon Cities. It's the other COEC, it's all cities. So, we think of ourselves as a town, but I don't think that word. This came up all the time in the corporation. There was one particular person that kept pushing the town thing. And, that was the whole part of the selling of it. But it is a small town feel, but we are a city and should be recognized as such.
I'm gonna call Ray and just ask about that, just out of curiosity as much as anything, to see how a city just voted down changing their name to something creative in Oregon in this election. Detroit wanted to change the name of their town.
Yeah.
Now, Detroit Lake, and I was going to say the city of Detroit Lake.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be careful, Dan. And my gut tells me, when you start changing the name of someone's city, more And love you dearly. No, more than the chamber president probably better be talking about it. You know, in Portland, they try to change Union Avenue to MLK or Portland Boulevard to Rosa Parks, and now 33rd Street is Cesar Chavez. And I'm telling you, they spent a lot of time and a lot of pain. And so I think you start changing the name of your city, that means a full vetting beyond this process. That's just my gut.
Yeah, and I don't feel as strongly about it as when I hear people talking, they don't want us to become a city. They want us to remain a town. And when I walked the neighborhoods, I kept hearing stuff like that. It's like, you know, we do not want to look like Redmond, or we don't want to look like Redmond. But we want to be a small town. And so that's why I'm reading about it. I don't feel that strongly about it. It wouldn't be changing the name. It's still a pun. And we've only been the single.
Well, it would be if you brought it up. We're putting it in here. You are changing it to the town of the Pine.
Yeah.
And so,
but instead of Pine, I mean, I'm just, I know the people that brought it to my attention initially said there was two towns that they were familiar with in California that were called Town of, and they weren't City of.
Yeah, Parish is in back east.
Yeah. So it's not a big thing. I just threw it out to see what people would think and see if it made a difference in how we saw ourselves or anything, you know. But I just like to be different. I don't like being like the other 200 counties.
Change it to the Pine City.
Well, I am going to ask you, is that
kind of... Yeah. I think that doesn't the, aren't they incorporated as townships? And there are some states that have townships.
The only comment I'd make, if anybody in the state of Oregon doesn't know what Pine is different, they'd be in the case.
Okay, we have any more comments? Moving right along.
Yes.
Yep. Another comment, brand new subject. Sort of. We're on the manager again. Section E, item number 33. Section E. As a part of the policy of KISS, keep it simple, silly person, I don't understand why the charter is delegating the duties of the manager when that should be a part of the job description, a city policy that's created by the council who knows what the manager needs to do and what they need not to do. I think we're just more involved in than we need to be. I don't think that the charter should spell out what the manager does. I think that should be done by the city councilors with an internal policy who know at any given level, whether we're right now where we have a good city manager or 5 years down the line when all kinds of services and sewer and water and everything else is being increased. It's up to the council, I believe, to set the duties for the manager, and it is definitely a question that I would have under number E3. Can you tell me, as the current city manager, how you're going to go out and enforce an ordinance that says no one's allowed to dump their horses stuck on the city road edge as opposed to on their property, which is some of an ordinance we might one day have. You're not allowed to put animal waste in the gutter. So how does he go out by law and enforce that and issue a ticket and get it to the municipal judge? So I think these are issues that have to be addressed by city council, not our charter.
Is that the template?
Yes.
I don't understand either, because it's, you know, these things could change
And you have to change the whole charter?
Well, no, because it says the bottom was perform other duties as directed, so this thing's coming to go. It's a catch-all.
Just count me up one.
My guess is that the reason that this, over 100 years of cities, is a little more defined, because it, you know, does that, you know, quite a few bullet points there, is that the council members over time, they want a clear separation. Councilman, you know, you decide to, that you want to kind of adopt an ordinance on nuisance stuff, that it's the manager's job to go out and get it enforced. And they can have other people do it, and they can have other, they don't say the manager has to do it, but it's their ultimate responsibility. I think it's trying to have a separation of powers. You have a president of the United States, and you know, and you have a Congress, and really, the we don't have a president. I think that it's just trying to have the separation of power. I assume over time there's been battles over councils trying to become the manager and be council. So it's pretty specifically saying, you know, they're going to put the budget together, not a councilman. They're going to, you know, support cooperation. It gets into what if you have a little bit of a disagreement amongst your council. They're supposed to help bring them together. It's laying these things out. And laying that out. Beyond that, I don't know why it's all in there.
What happens when you have a disagreement? Let's say that the city council has pulled together an employment agreement with a city manager, and they didn't cancel all this wide-ranging stuff that's listed here. Let's say they forgot to put in item number 3. Does that mean that the manager is still bound by the charter's item number 3?
Everything. The charter supersedes everything.
That means they could fire them, even though they put together that job description.
But the council can, in the employment agreement, come up with 15 items as opposed to 11.
Yeah, you just couldn't go against one of these.
It should be in the job description of the city manager. What should be? These and then anything else they want to add to it.
Probably in the city manager job description or in a contract it would say,
right,
some paragraph in it would say, and it, anything that's not in disagreement with the charter, or it must, you know, if there's a conflict between the charter and the agreement, the charter supersedes.
My name's Karen Ward, and I'm a resident of the city. I got out of part of this when I read it, that the charter is saying that the city has to have a city manager. Now, don't jump on me, because it's okay that you have a city manager, but why would you make your charter saying that you have to have a city manager? Wouldn't that be the choices of the council and what they need, whether they need full-time, part-time, someone not by the name of city manager? That bothered me. That we are saying in this charter that when that city manager leaves, you will immediately hire another one. Whether or not you needed that person. There's a lot of work here, I understand that, okay? But we just laid off somebody because we got someone else in the office so that there wasn't enough work for that person because that person took it off. So what I'm asking is, if whether you want to put in something that legally binds you to the fact that you have to replace something that maybe you don't need. Now, it's just a question in my mind. And when I read this, I thought,
This is saying you must have a city manager, but it could be a volunteer. See, this doesn't require you paying a dollar a year. It's just saying, if you're going to be a city, the council can't be the city manager, just like the chairman of the board. You may have a president of the company, whatever it is. So there's a council, but you're going to have someone appointed to be city manager. You can pay them nothing. And I mean, what they're saying is, if you want to be a city, that's just what you have to be. So the fact that we lay off employees because we don't have work for them, someone has to be appointed city manager.
I think what this charter is saying is, our city is so important, we have to have a city manager. Whether it's part-time, full-time, paid, unpaid.
A few old charters call them city administrator, which you find out that term isn't being used, and everyone that redoes them changes them to city manager, and there's a technical difference in there.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on what you said, Cumberford, that can be solved very simply by under section 33 under D, where it says the council must fill the office, you just say the council may fill the office. And down on H, where it says the council must appoint a manager pro tem, the council may appoint a council.
That
gives the authority to the city council to weigh what is actually really needed. Maybe we don't need a, and we don't at this time, a full-time city manager.
It doesn't say that, so you don't have a full-time.
The council made that decision that it would be part-time instead of full-time.
And they can
based
that on this chart.
Based upon need.
Right.
So instead of saying you must, maybe we should say you may.
But my question would be, if we may, that obviously means we may not. Who owns the city?
Well, yes, you have a point, but also by saying you must fill a vacancy, it doesn't say when either.
It says practical, as soon as practical.
The charter is not giving any qualifications for the position.
No.
So, therefore, a city manager would be an elevated dog catcher. Because
the council needs managers, so they take the dog catcher and take the manager title.
Is that right?
It can be a council member?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, again, if you're just doing it as a volunteer type position, you could appoint it.
Well, my question is, if you could appoint a city council member to run the city, you can't be doing both positions.
You can't be paid.
You could volunteer for a month.
But again, the four of the council would have to appoint you.
Okay.
Well, we got one more.
Adele McAfee, I think it just preserves the division between policy and administrative. And let's say that a counselor was had to step into the manager's position, then that counselor will have expressed authority to do that. And that's very important.
Kenny Shields, maybe it could be fixed by just a change of terminology. It could be city manager or administrative head. You have to have an administrative head.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just a change in terminology might fix
it. There will be a legal difference between the word manager and administrator.
Yeah.
As far as responsibilities and what you can do to that person.
But wouldn't again, that be defined by the policy that the council makes for a position description?
I don't know if that's probably true, but I don't know that it isn't defined at a higher level, perhaps at the state level.
I'm thinking that it's evident here to me that you have a separation of the council and the management of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So here's what you've got. You get a manager that isn't there. Just temporarily disabled, quits, or whatever. You still need a city manager. You still need, you call him whatever you want, but we're calling him in here a city manager. because the day-to-day running of the city is important, and that's become evident by the fact that all of the stuff that's taken place since we got a city manager. So you're actually separating the duties and the understanding of who does what. The council counsels. The city manager runs the day-to-day operations. And I think we could get a very good description out of our city manager right now about how many phone calls he takes, how much, you know, there's so much intricacy in doing the job of running the city that I think this is very well done. I think changing some of these words around complicates it.
Right.
Okay.
Devices. Did you have something to say? I thought I saw somebody.
Well, it's 8:15, and
yeah,
probably
8:15. Can we start? Do we have a lot of other? Do we need to consider doing this again? Do I even want to bring that up?
No, I would think not when I look at the makeup of the audience, and that's
I think, you know,
three new councilmen and one existing councilman, a majority of the council is sitting in the room. You're making a recommendation to the council. All five of you. And then when you say the other audience, you've got former councilmen and spouses.
And
former mayors, and two county residents, and someone who's here just to listen. So, you know, I don't think we need another hearing.
Okay.
I think that ultimately you've heard some things about voting on the tie issue. Maybe you want to rethink that. You do need to, it's a little bit like you've taken you have to decide on this out-of-town person. You can go home and pray, you can go home and get drunk, but ultimately, you're going to, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, have to raise your hand on that issue and weigh it in. And then you're going to make a recommendation to council. The council is going to get to think about it. Dan wants to change the name. Dan's going to get a vote on that. Dan's going to be on the city council. I think it's important that we send pretty much how it needs to move forward, because if they start moving with it very much, unless it's strong opinion, that, you know, because then if they spend a couple, 3 months at it, this has to be done by the 1st of March to get on the ballot. They just take office the second week of January, so we don't have a lot of time to do a bunch of things and get a legal review. So I think you kind of need to think about mostly it's going through as planned, but they do get a look at it again in the public. It'll be on the agenda. Someone can come to a meeting and comment. And our next meeting is public. You know.
And when is our next meeting?
That you need to pick.
Let's talk about it.
I would think during the first part of December, so that we have time to get it. You don't want to get it after Christmas. And you got Thanksgiving, so. And then she knows when we're busy, if we have lots of meetings.
Yeah, we probably couldn't do it before Thanksgiving.
So maybe do that first week of December.
Is the first week of December bad for anybody?
I may not be here, but that's okay.
I don't know if that's okay or not.
We don't have too much on the
7th. Yeah, but it's
okay. Everybody can be here.
Okay, 8 is on Wednesday. You want to do the 7th? The day before the council meeting on Tuesday night, the 7th?
No, I think
that'd be the first Tuesday.
Well,
you could do it the 30th. That's after Thanksgiving. The November 30th.
How about the
1st? Could do it the 1st if we don't have a planning commission. Okay, the 1st? Wednesday the 1st.
Wednesday the 1st.
At 6 p.m.
Oh, wait, is that Wednesday?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't do
that. That's why we weren't doing them on Wednesday.
Yeah.
The
30th? Okay.
At 6 p.m., we'll be back down at our regular meeting room.
Okay.
And so we're thinking about what you're going to want, and then there we'll enter them in, and then we'll have a final one to send to the council. We'll let Jerry even do a look at it during December, and then but we'll get it to these guys the first meeting in January. Probably the first meeting in January. We could do the second meeting and make it a meeting. Have that one of our topics that night, just because it's important enough. Because otherwise your meeting, let's do that, make our second meeting in January to the council.
I'd like to thank, if you don't mind, I'd like to thank all of you for being on the committee and put together a good draft. Yes. You really did. Yes. And I know you're all heartfelt in all the different areas that we covered tonight, and I appreciate your holding this meeting so I could get my head out of the sand. It's a long to be sand, but yes.
All comments were very good, and we will consider.
I appreciate your being here.
I really appreciate it. Because I know the DEQ steering committee meeting was tonight at Midstate.
Do we need to approve the minutes from last month, or do we do that?
That won't, that'll be done.
No, we don't need to do that. We said that's your right. Just wanted to.
Good. We're adjourned.
Thank you.